The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It is a very busy Wednesday here at the Skyview Network Studios and on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Jordan Hamm on the Brad Sessmatt Show, and there is a lot to get to. Talking some Suns, looking ahead to the Cardinals, taking on the 49ers again twice in the span of like 12 days or something like that. ASU news, of course. We'll have Michael Fabiano joining Brad Sessmatt, talking some fantasy football. The fantasy, it's a big week. There are a lot of buys. A lot of people are making pushes for the postseason. So definitely want to make sure that everybody can hear and see that as well. Plus a story I did a couple of months ago, getting a pretty cool update to it. And we're going to get to that as well. Just got some really cool news that I'm excited to share about one of the athletes that Sports 360 AZ has covered a couple of months ago. So excited to retell her story as well as give a quick update. And it's a pretty sizable deal. So pretty cool there. Let's waste no time. Let's get right to our rundown brought to you by Sagicore Now. Sagicore Now, protect what matters most. And it seems like all eyes last night were on the Suns taking on the LA Lakers, LeBron, AD, beat LA chance, you know, even when both teams are garbage, you'll hear that at Talking Stick Resort Arena. Both teams are far from garbage right now. Right now, the Lakers sitting atop the Western Conference, and the Suns gave them a pretty good fight last night, was able to catch most of this game. 123-115 was the final. Brad Sessmatt wrote a column on Sports 360 AZ just on what the impact DeAndre Ayton could have had on this game, because he said that the Suns had no chance to win that game. I don't think that's quite necessarily fair, but it would have made a huge impact. And I'm excited to see mixing Aaron Baines and with DeAndre Ayton. How is that going to affect the lineup? What's that going to do? How is that going to open things up? Because right now, yes, it's a wide open opportunity for Aaron Baines to get a lot of playing time, and his numbers are reflecting that. But he is making the most of that opportunity and being a tremendous asset for the Suns early on. But when you look at Anthony Davis's numbers, 24 points, 12 rebounds in 38 minutes, I feel like he was the difference in that game. LeBron had a very LeBron-esque stat line of 19 points, 11 assists, and 7 rebounds. But there were some second chance points that came through for the Lakers, and I think a big part of that was Anthony Davis. But you're seeing this Suns team not only just be competitive, which is something I think we all expected, but it would be a team of, we'll say 30 wins. But they wouldn't be blown out as much. They're in the position to win a lot of these games. And it's just, you can tell at Talking Stick Resort Arena how different it is. And yeah, it's the Lakers. Of course you're going to get a big showing for the Lakers and LeBron. Plenty of name recognition. But there's a different vibe about this team. And again, it might be as simple as getting a head coach who has done it before and a point guard who has done it before, and that helps kind of open everything up. But you're seeing Kelly Oubre Jr. Develop into a nice wing. Had a rough night last night, but you're seeing depth on this team where, look, I cover sports in Phoenix, and the past couple of years you asked the eighth, ninth guy on the Suns roster. It's like, oh, which G League player is it? I don't know. What's that guy's name? Not sure. You're seeing depth come through, and you're seeing, Cameron Johnson start to take steps. 11 points last night. Ricky Rubio, Aaron Baines, Devin Booker, all 20 plus. Frank Kaminsky, 16-9. He plenty of under the radar signings, and that's what the good teams do. Some of these guys didn't move the needle too much. When they were acquired by the Suns. But again, small sample size. We're in the first, eighth of the season the regular season, but it's very evident that this is a different product. Defensively, they are not playing like Matadors anymore. Plenty of room to grow, but a lot to be excited about for the Phoenix Suns. With the Arizona Coyotes, they are another team that, it's tough this time of year right now because you have, games going on simultaneously. And that was the case last night. The Suns and Lakers and Yotes and Blues and the Coyotes have been in so many close games. I teach over at the Cronkite School, and one of my students was putting together a show and as a producer, and she actually came to me and said, hey, five straight games the Coyotes have given up the lead, but they've still won the game. Like, that is pretty simultaneously not great and really good at the same time, that they can recover, still get the W, still get those points, but they're giving up leads and playing a lot of close games. But you go back-to-back nights, winning against the Capitals in a shootout, winning against the Blues in a shootout. This is another team. You look back to just all of the injuries they had to go through last year. I think that just created a ton of depth. And then you bring in those key pieces, and you have two really good goalies. Saw Luke Lipinski say it's great when you have two number ones that you can just shuffle in and out on back-to-back nights. And that's, I don't know if that was necessarily by design, but all of a sudden the Coyotes have depth too. You look at the Cardinals, they're making progress. The Diamondbacks, I think, are in a really good place for the next couple of years. And GM meetings are happening in Phoenix right now, hoping to catch up with Mike Hazen today, and there will be content on Sports 360 AZ regarding that. But the state of Arizona sports on the professional level, you have Phoenix Rising playing really well. They made an exit earlier than most anticipated, but they're gaining traction as well. U of A is going to be a top 20 basketball program. ASU, I think, should be pretty competitive. The football seasons, I think, have been a touch disappointing for both squads right now, but ASU, I feel like three of those games are very winnable that they lost, and I think that team knows it. You want to look glass half full? A lot of these guys are going to be back next year and the year after that. A lot of youth on this team. They've got to figure out their wide receiver position, I think, a little bit moving forward, but you'll see the up and down happen with plenty of freshmen. Now the key for Herm Edwards and his staff is to limit that up and down as these guys go through the ranks. That's something we haven't had time to see whether that's going to happen, because when Herm Edwards came in, it was a very senior group, especially on the offensive side of the football. Now you saw some of those young contributors on the defense. Some of them have continued that ascent. Some of them have kind of plateaued. Some of them have, frankly, dropped off a little bit. But let's see what they do now with this mass freshman, mass sophomore group that's going to be playing a lot of Pac-12 football. Are they going to continue this ascent? Are they going to dip? What's going to happen? They have a tough game at Oregon State. I am not, usually you play Oregon State, you can chalk it up to, all right, it's going to be a W. I don't think it's the case this year. Oregon State is much better than people give them credit for. ASU in a tough spot mentally right now. Can they stop the bleeding? And when you go to Corvallis in November, it's just always a weird game. It's just strange. You do that. The Washington State, even when they weren't quite what they were currently, it always felt like, yeah, that game was closer than it should have been. That was a little bit more of a slugfest than it really should have been. So you have that. Then you have ho-hum Oregon coming in. Top 10 team. One of two top 10 teams in the conference that will be coming to ASU. That's going to be a interesting weekend for both teams, ASU and U of A. U of A is hosting Utah. ASU's hosting Oregon. Two potential college football playoff teams in the state at once. We'll see if some interesting things can happen that that weekend. Coming up next, we're going to talk a bit more about the Cardinals. Kyle Odegaard gave a great stat on kind of where the offense is at right now and you know, where can they grow from there. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmet Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmet Show. During this break, I saw some sad news. Danny Gonzalez, the Sun Devils defensive coordinator, his mother died, had some health issues, was in critical condition, and had some procedures. And based on the reports I was reading, things seemed to be improving, but ultimately she died last night. Condolences to the Gonzalez family, and thoughts and prayers with them as well. There's no real easy way to transition out of something like that to something as trivial as a football game. So I'm just going to do it. And we're going to focus on the Arizona Cardinals now, looking ahead with the schedule. Obviously, they're taking on the San Francisco 49ers up in California, and that's going to be, I think, it's going to be interesting to see how these two teams, how differently they play versus the first time they matched up, based on the information they now have on the teams, and also that they have multiple days to prepare for them. It was a Thursday night game the first time they played. It seemed like things kind of all sides just seemed a little more basic than usual, and that's kind of what you'll see with Thursday night football thing. You know, they just get back to what they do well and go ahead and do it. That was Kenyon Drake's coming out party with the Cardinals, the first start for him, or first game for him, I should say. But he came out and so far has unseated David Johnson as the featured back. This running back's room is going to be real interesting moving forward. How Kenyon Drake is going to be used, how David Johnson is going to be used once Chase Edmonds is back, who has been has proven to be a very capable NFL running back. How are they going to split all that up? What's going to happen? There were plenty of times where Kenyon Drake and David Johnson on Sunday were out on the field at the same time, but the bulk of everything went to Kenyon Drake. But Kyle Odegaard from the Cardinals does a great job covering the team, put out this stat. Cardinals have scored on 40.5% of their drives, which is seventh highest in the NFL. They've turned it over on 5.4% of their drives, which is second lowest. Now you look at that, you see a 3-6-1 record. And part of that is probably a little bit bad luck, probably some rough defensive play. But that was a really telling sign on where we are currently with the Arizona Cardinals and where we are currently with Kyler Murray as a starting quarterback. Because there are plenty of examples of the rookie quarterback coming in and throwing 25 picks. And, you know, just, you know, either seeing ghosts, as Sam Darnold said, and he's in his second year, or just the game is quicker. There haven't been many times where the game looks like way too quick for Kyler Murray. There are times he doesn't have time. I think that's more of a reflection for the offensive line. And maybe him. There have been plenty of times of him trying to do a bit too much. But usually when you hear that term from a quarterback, that means he forced it into a tight window and it got picked off. Most of the time with Kyler Murray trying to do too much, it's trying to get to the outside, trying to get a 3-yard gain, and just runs out of space. And rather than tossing it away, it's a 4-yard loss. Even on the mistakes, they're minimized than what they are for the usual rookie quarterback. So that's just that's very telling of just how he's been able to play. Probably the system that Cliff Kingsbury has been able to utilize to limit those. Because it's not like it's, you know, with Seattle, that Seattle game, it was the dink and dunk. Like, it was what he completed a ton of passes, but only had about 200 passing yards, if that. It's not, you know, let's take all the risk out of it. They're going downfield. They're making plays. It's continuing to evolve. But they're taking those shots, and he's still able to make sure the deadly interception doesn't come through. I mean, he set the NFL record for most consecutive completions by a rookie and he like squashed that record without an interception. So that's very telling of where the defense is at. You know, for weeks and weeks and weeks, I've been saying, all right, you're going to have, based on if things go probably the way the projections go, you'll probably still have a back end of the top 10 pick, top 15 pick, somewhere in there. Just go get the best offensive lineman. Maybe go get the best defensive lineman. This stat probably says, maybe just go get that the best defensive player you can. It's going to be interesting to see how this is built, because this past offseason they turned everything over and kind of for certain areas had to use just pieces that they had, and all right, we're going to just make it work. Now that Cliff Kingsbury can give feedback to Steve Keim on here's what we need, here's what I want, here's the gaping holes in the system that is holding us back from truly, truly thriving and, you know, scoring in the top three of the league rather than the top seven. It's going to be interesting to see how that works out. There have been many times that we've heard from various people around the NFL that, you know, the Cardinals clearly need a premier left tackle, a premier offensive lineman. And going the free agency route, it's either going to be too expensive or the more affordable options are going to have injuries, baggage, whatever it may be. And that shelf life for offensive linemen can be so short at times just because of how brutal the NFL game is, that if you can go find a young offensive lineman that you can build around, I don't see how the Cardinals still pass that up. But the way that how the to-do list or the wish list for players is going to be, it's going to be very interesting to see how they develop that and look into that moving forward. Not only the rest of the way this season, but with the offseason as well. Because not that long ago, we were saying, like, Alfred Morris is going to be your featured back. And now all of a sudden, there's potentially three running backs that are going to switch or, you know, be splitting time, and three running backs that are probably deserve to be out there. So how is Cliff Kingsbury going to be that innovator to get multiple guys what they need to make sure that the offense is truly rolling? But they're going to have a brutal stretch coming up here. A lot of NFC West. We talked about that offense, 40% of the time they're scoring on drives. They're now going up against the number two overall defense. Now they're going to play the Steelers. They're going to play the Rams a couple of times. Rams number 11 right now. Steelers number 12. It kind of a lot of middle of the road defenses. Browns at 17. But it's going to be a very telling game against the San Francisco 49ers. Just, is this going to be where the depth kicks in? And now that they have more of a scouting report on Kyler Murray and this offense, that they'll be able just to take care of business? Or is it going to be, you know, that prep time helps the Cardinals more? So interesting little stretch that we're hitting with the NFL season. Obviously a lot to like, but still plenty to, you know, see where the growth is. You know, Patrick Peterson left with a calf strain. We'll see if he's playing. Byron Murphy's been playing pretty darn well so far. He's been a good number one. Got his first pick on Sunday. You know, I don't think he's at the level of, yeah, let's just plug him in for Pat P and be, all right, you got your number one cornerback. I think that's an area they definitely have to look at in the offseason. But you look at the depth with that now is created with Kenyon Drake, with Chase Edmonds. Is David Johnson now maybe potentially an option that would move on? What about Pat P's future? The contracts obviously play a big role, but, you know, just there as the season comes through, we're getting more answers, but we are getting way more questions as well about just the vision of this, you know, very unique style that the Cardinals are taking. How's that going to work? roster improvements have to happen. But how do you balance all of that? And that's why NFL GMs get paid the big bucks. Coming up next, Brad Sesmat with Michael Fabiano, talking fantasy football, answering your questions, all that and more coming up on the Brad Sesmat Show.
Thanks again to Chris Spielman for jumping on board for a couple of minutes. We will have Brock Huard momentarily, but first and foremost, the Hall of Famer jumps in. That is Michael Fabiano. It's always good to catch up with Michael from the NFL Network, all things fantasy football. If I had to choose between Jared Goff or Phillip Rivers, if I'm in Los Angeles, I'm doing my fantasy, and I'm looking at these two quarterbacks saying, what in God's green earth is going on here? Where do I go?
Yeah. You may want to pass on both of them. I mean, this week it would be Rivers because they're playing the Chargers. I believe that's they're playing the Chiefs. That's a game over in Mexico on Monday night, while Goff is at home against the Bears. And Goff's just, he's regressed. He's just not a good quarterback right now. And someone who, to be quite honest with you, should be on the waiver wire in fantasy leagues.
Wow. You just wanted to blow him out, huh?
It's the truth. Listen, there's a lot of good quarterbacks out there. You could see playing a guy like Josh Allen every week over someone like Jared Goff. I mean, if the matchup's right, Goff is a guy you can stream. But last year, this is a player who was starting almost every week in your fantasy lineups. And now, you can't trust him. You just can't. The two previous games that he had played were against bad opponents. And he put up decent stat lines this week. He ran into a tough opponent, and this coming week he's got another one. So he's a guy that I'm fading. You can't always look at last year's production and start a guy based on name value alone.
I know.
And we've actually seen that with several players this year, including Todd Gurley and Juju Smith-Schuster, just to name a few.
Yeah, the Rams, though, are just actually both L.A. teams from a fantasy standpoint. I've got Austin Eckler, and I've hung with him, yep. You know, and Gordon is coming back, and he's playing really well, but I just feel like both L.A. teams, if you've got players on either one of those teams, you are really rolling the dice to do anything this year.
Well, it's honestly more the Rams. I mean, Cooper Kupp, I don't know what happened yesterday.
Nothing.
It was a weird game.
Yeah, it was.
There were some weird games there because, like, Drew Brees, how does he score 10 points against the Atlanta Falcons? Like, that defense is trash. And they scored 9 points in that game. He had 10 fantasy points. It was terrible. And then you see what happened with Saquon Barkley. I had to do a double take, 13 carries, 1 yard. I mean, if Vince Lombardi were around, he'd be saying, what the hell is going on out there? It was just very strange. The Chargers actually have had some pretty, you know, Gordon's back to being Gordon. Eckler still has standalone value. Keenan Allen had 8 catches last week, although he had been a bit of a disappointment. Hunter Henry's been really good since he's come back from the knee injury. And honestly, it's funny because I just mentioned this on the podcast. When you look at the Rams offense, maybe the only guy you can trust every week outside of Cooper Kupp, and I think yesterday was sort of an anomaly, yeah, is Gerald Everett. He's been really good because Goff's been checking down more often this season than he had last year.
Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, with us from the NFL Network. Derek Carr the next week says the Bengals and the Jets. So I'm looking long and hard at what to do. I've got Kyler and I've got Russell Wilson, and I'm going to trade one of them.
Yep.
Derek Carr, there's somebody, right? I'm getting questions on quarterbacks the next few weeks.
Yeah, really good. I didn't like him last week because the matchup was tough against the Chargers. But as you mentioned, two really good games based on the numbers in a row for Derek Carr, who's going to be a popular guy to pick up off the wire. If you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Russell Wilson, who are both on buys in week 11. So, yeah, Carr's a really nice play. Nick Foles is somebody to pick up if you need a quarterback as well, although I like Carr a little bit more because of the matchups. But Nick Foles is back as the starter in Jacksonville, so he's someone that you can potentially go out there and stream as well.
Okay, getting a lot of questions from the mailbag, Michael. OBJ, where is he at here? He's not a number one anymore, or is he?
Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, all you can do is play him. You can try to trade him. You're not going to get much in terms of a return, at least not what you would have gotten if you try to trade him, you know, a week after the draft, let's put it that way. And the good thing is that Baker actually forced him the ball. He had a lot of targets yesterday. But, I mean, that whole Browns offense outside of Nick Chubb is really been unreliable for fantasy owners. Let's just put it that way. So unless you can try and trade OBJ and get some sort of value with him, I don't know that you have many options other than to just sort of play him every week and hope things get better.
Chris Godwin, Tampa Bay. Where are you at? A lot of questions today in the mailbag.
I know. I mean, he hasn't scored a touchdown in a while. It's been just all Mike Evans. I still like this kid a lot, and I feel like he'll turn things around. Good news this week is that it looks like Marshawn Lattimore is not going to play for the Saints, so that's a better matchup. And then he's got Atlanta coming up in Week 12, which is a cakewalk. He's also got Detroit and Houston in the final 2 weeks of the fantasy postseason, so I'd stick with Chris Godwin.
Devontae Freeman's injury means Brian Hill in Atlanta. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, and he's got a really good matchup against the Panthers. He's probably going to be the most added player off the wire this week. He showed some flashes this past week. I get it. It was a small sample size, but Carolina's defense is bad against the run. I mean, you know, Aaron Jones had, what, 3 touchdowns against them yesterday. They're just not good. So Brian Hill comes into a spot where potentially as a featured back, unless Atlanta goes out and signs somebody, he is going to be a very viable fantasy starter in Week 11.
Starting to see Kareem Hunt get some run. Is he impacting Nick Chubb yet?
No, because he played as a receiver for the most part, and he had more fantasy points than Nick Chubb in PPR leagues, and I feel like that's the perfect mix of those two guys being on the field at the same time. I think we saw them play 20 personnel over 40% of the time, which is when two running backs are on the field at the same time, and it really didn't affect Nick Chubb. He still saw his complement. Full complement of touches, and he was still the red zone guy, although the Browns struggled mightily in the red zone. And you know, Kareem Hunt was a guy that they used as a playmaker, got him out in space, throwing passes out of the backfield, so lined him up in the slot, lined him up out wide. Hey, he's a versatile guy, and if the Browns continue to do that, I don't think we'll have any issues starting Nick Chubb for certain, and Kareem Hunt in PPR leagues.
Okay, I'm going through the Twitter feed here. Darius Slayton, a lot of fans asking about him. The Giants are on a bye this week, but was
massive
he
a game?
What do you think?
I mean, here's the issue with me. They're on a bye coming up, and then you would think with 2 more weeks, Evan Ingram's going to be back. I know Evan Ingram's going to be back, and then Sterling Shepard is going to be closer to coming back. And then you have Golden Tate, who's been great. So to me, if this was a situation where the Giants are playing next week and we still had question marks about Sterling Shepard, then Darius Slayton would be a guy that you pick up off the wire. But I'm probably not even going to put a claim for him in most of my leagues because I can't use him next week. And there's 4 teams off, and there's a chance that the target share is going to dwindle mightily. Let's put it that way. Once the Giants do get back on the field there, in week 12.
I know Golden Tate's been really good. Are you believing in him every week now?
Yeah, he's an every week guy. It is. The situation has really just been perfect for him. Let's put it that way, because ever since he's come back from the suspension, you know, Sterling Shepard's been banged up. Yep. He hasn't been available. Evan Ingram has missed a couple of games. So he and Daniel Jones has shown a propensity to like to throw the ball in the slot. So Golden Tate has been a tremendous add off the waiver wire, or if you drafted him and sat on him for the first few weeks of the season, right now you're reaping the rewards of that decision.
Tell you one thing before I get out of here, David Johnson's time in Arizona, my friend. It's not good over here.
He looked like he was running with a piano on his back.
Yeah.
Like he's not right. And now you've got the Niners. And I'm already starting to do research for start him and sit him. And David Johnson's going to be my sit of the week at running back. You can't play him. You just can't. The snaps aren't there. The touches aren't there. And Kenyon Drake wasn't even good yesterday. Tampa Bay's defense is really good against the run. They're awful against the pass, but they're really good against the run. And now you got San Francisco. And I get it. Drake had a huge game against them a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if that game script is going to remain the same when they play a road game. But it sucks because David Johnson was having a pretty good season. And then the injury started him out, and he's unplayable right now. Not against the Niners.
If Chase said
less than 100%.
Well, and if Chase Edmonds comes back too, I think you look at Chase Edmonds as the guy here long term. The thing, Michael, is I go back to when David Johnson in his rookie season, his first 2 years here, he got run into the ground by Bruce. They used him so much. Go back and look at the number of touches he had. It was like, what are you guys doing? It was abuse. I mean, it really was.
Yep.
So let's go off that. Appreciate your time and insight.
It's too bad because he's such a great player. And hopefully
great guy.
There are better things ahead. But right now, not playable in fantasy.
See you later. Thanks, man.
See you, pal.
Take care. This is Michael Fabiano with us for the NFL Network. Good stuff. Brock Heward, college football. Is it LSU? Is it Ohio State? He saw Brock Purdy in person. I've been gushing about him forever. What did he think? And what's going on with ASU and U of A? That is next with Brock Heward. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. Appreciate Michael Fabiano on his insight as always. Going to share a story that I put together in late May, early June. The Desert Challenge comes to Phoenix every year, and it's a athletic competition weekend, essentially, for a lot of disabled sports. And one of the athletes there was Noelle Lambert, and she is has been in national headlines, been doing just a lot in the community and that sort of thing. So I came across that she was going to be there, reached out to her, and we were able to have a conversation. And she has a pretty incredible story. She lost her leg playing. Well, she was a lacrosse player at UMass Lowell after her freshman year, lost her leg in a moped accident. She worked her way back over the course of about 2 years and had a prosthetic, finally got cleared with the NCAA. It was a long process to get that cleared. Her first game back, she scored a goal. So that's where you might have seen her on ESPN. She was on Good Morning America, like all of these, national publications. But she graduated from college and decided to try her hand at track. And she ended up winning her first race, which was pretty incredible to watch, doing the 100 meters. And it was kind of, her mom was there and her prosthetist and slash trainer, who was also a Paralympian, a former Paralympian in skiing. And they were just kind of like, we're just kind of figuring it out as we go and we'll see what happens. And who knows? She ends up winning the race. She ends up hitting a time that is like, oh, okay, like this could translate to the Paralympics. So she decides to pursue that goal. So currently she's in Dubai for the Paralympic Championship, which is every 2 years. I just got word that she apparently set the U.S. record for the 100 meters. So has just been absolutely killing it in the community. She's been doing a lot. The Born to Run Foundation, look it up if interested in donating. She pretty much has found people over the past year or so to get them specialized prosthetics so that they can live an active life, pursue sports, whatever. It's all different ages. The first one, was a 3-year-old. But they're continuing to donate and just do a lot of really good work. But she's competing now, apparently just set the U.S. record for the 100 meters. So thought we would play that story that we did back in May on Noelle Lambert and all the work she's doing in athletics and in the community. In July 2016, what may have first looked like an obstacle became a starting block for Noelle Lambert. The UMass Lowell lacrosse player had wrapped up her freshman year and was vacationing in Martha's Vineyard. Noelle and a teammate were riding a moped when they collided with a garbage truck. Noelle lost her left leg in the process.
I was conscious the whole time. I can remember every single detail about it. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, lacrosse has been my life. I mean, sports has been my life. In high school, as a three-sport athlete, I never went through a time period where I wasn't doing something active. So I honestly thought my life was going to be over.
From the day of the injury on, the lacrosse team supported Noelle, and she remained close to the program, missing no school and using humor and hard work to find her routine.
The funny thing about my story is I had never had someone tell me that I was not going to be able to do something, which I'm really grateful for, because you hear all these stories and people are saying, you're never going to be able to walk again, you're never going to be able to run again. So I was really grateful that I had that support system, because people weren't going to let me use my disability as something that was going to limit me. My teammates were one of the main reasons why I was always so positive and everything, because they joked around with me about it, and that helped me feel comfortable enough. That helped them feel comfortable enough with me and everything, so I'm grateful for that.
Noelle set her sights on making a return to the lacrosse field to play at the Division I level. Her prosthetist, Jason Lala, is a former Paralympic gold medal skier and knew what it would take to come back from that sort of injury.
I lost my leg in a motorcycle accident when I was 18 years old, couple weeks out of high school. Grew up playing lacrosse and hockey, so we had very similar mindset and actually even kind of a similar story in a similar age.
He knew exactly like what needed to be happening for me, like what I needed to be doing. And I mean, just having someone that has gone through similar situations as I have and like has been very active and not letting like their amputation like limit them or anything has been very special to me.
A new level of focus and work ethic was required of Noelle to get walking again, let alone competing at a Division I level.
Before my accident, I was one of those types of players that just went through the motions every day in practice and never put in any extra work or anything like that. And I mean, now I have to put in that extra work. And to be able to compete in a Division I lacrosse level, I had to be putting in three extra workouts a day, more than anybody else, because I had one less leg.
Having the opportunity to watch her go from her taking her first steps in our office and her telling me that her goal was to return to Division I lacrosse, being an above-knee amputee myself, I'm going, ooh, that's going to be tough. Like, I know she'll be able to run, but changing directions and stuff, that's a whole different deal.
After 21 months of rehab and getting cleared by the NCAA, Noelle returned to the field. And in her first game back, she scored.
Just seeing the joy for my teammates, I mean, that was the best part. I mean, it was really cool being able to score again, but like seeing the joy from my teammates and coaches, I mean, none of it would have been possible if it wasn't for them. They took a chance on me. They never let me use like my disability as something that was going to limit me or anything. So I'm very grateful for that support.
And they're going to empty the bench for that one.
Watching the video, I teared up watching it. It was just awesome. So to be part of that, the satisfaction I get with knowing that I was a small part of that journey for her, which is continuing, it was just awesome.
Now when I look back on the accident, I'm grateful that it happened to me because, I mean, it changed my life. It changed my perspective and what's important in life. I mean, it changed the type of person I was, type of teammate, athlete, and everything.
Noelle couldn't have returned to the field without her family, team, and support system, but also the generosity of two charities who donated her waterproof and running prosthetic to her.
I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for them. They helped me get back to what I was doing before my accident, back to my regular life. So, I mean, that just inspired me to want to give back to others. So I started the Born to Run Foundation, which specializes in donating prosthetics to younger adults or children who just want to live a fun and fulfilling life.
Noelle has already donated three prosthetics so far, with multiple future donations lined up. And it's been a busy spring for Noelle. She graduated college and has now shifted her focus to the track, trying her hand at the 100-meter dash, with her first race being at the Desert Challenge in Tempe.
It's very different going from a team sport to an individual sport. You're only running by yourself and it's only your time, so it takes some adjusting too. But I think playing at the level that I did with lacrosse and everything, and doing the run test and everything, it's helped me be very competitive and be able to keeping up with other people.
I mean, you're taking the challenges that an able-bodied athlete has, and then you're throwing a mechanical device into that mix. And that device, the prosthesis, which is, you know, what I specialize in, that makes all the difference in the world. And if it's set up improperly or is not fitting well, there's no chance that they'll be able to compete at their peak level.
I'm looking to get to the next level. I mean, obviously I'm looking to compete in nationals and compete in the Paralympics, but I mean, I'm a rookie now and I don't know how well I'm gonna do and I don't know what process I need to go through and everything. I'm honestly just learning as I go.
And just like her return to lacrosse, Noelle thrived on the track, winning her division in her very first race.
I learned a lot actually from being here for like 3 days. I had so many people helping like critique like my form and everything. I mean, I got to see so many amazing racers and like what they can do and everything. So it's really humbling experience coming to something like this, and just I'm excited to see what comes next, but I'm also just grateful that I was able to come here and be able to compete alongside the best people in the world. And it's good to get it over with, just the first jitters and everything. I mean, before the race I was shaking, and so I mean, it was great. Great to get it over with. Now I'm looking forward to what's next.
So her incredible story is continuing, seemingly with Team USA. So really cool. Just wanted to, again, share that story. And again, she has the Born to Run Foundation, if you want to check that out and donate. I know they have shirts and are raising funds, just doing multiple events throughout the year to give people like her an opportunity to, you know, do whatever they want, thanks to prosthetics donated by her. So awesome story, and it's cool to see that that's continuing. And hopefully, if she's back for a future desert challenge, we can catch up with her and see what life has been like in the last year. Awesome stuff there. Appreciate Devin Henry on the other side of the glass, the Swiss Army knife of Sports 360 AZ. Appreciate Brad Sesmat and Michael Fabiano for breaking down some fantasy football. I'm Jordan Hamm, and this is the Brad Sesmat Show.